The business of television has become so complex that many of us have no idea which channels are free and which we're paying for, or how much we're paying and why. Today on Please Explain, we're going to learn how to distinguish between a broadcaster, a content provider, and a cable company, and we're going to have expert help in deciphering the fees and services listed on a standard cable bill. We likely won't be able to answer the question most often asked, though, why? With 1,000 channels, it seems that there's still often nothing to watch. Joining me now with some of the answers is Joel Kelsey, Associate Policy Analyst for Consumers Union, and which is the publisher of Consumer Reports. Welcome to our show.
Hi, thank you for having me, Leonard.
We'll also be taking your calls in a little while. Our number here is 212-433-9692, or you can leave your comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Please don't send us any email because, to be honest, I just can't multitask that much and check out the email on top of everything else. Joel, cable television is now so much a part of our lives. When was it developed and how did it evolve?
Well, cable TV was actually developed as a way to get broadcast signals from free television broadcasters like NBC and ABC out to the homes in valleys and mountainous regions that couldn't get the signal. It actually was developed in Pennsylvania in about the 1940s when a guy who owned a hardware store figured out that if you put a big antenna on top of a mountain nearby and then ran some wires from that antenna down to his store, he could transport the signal. And since then, they started using coax cable and figured out that you could take coax cable and use multiple signals from that antenna and deliver it to a whole bunch of folks' homes within that neighborhood or community. And fast forward a couple decades, and you had some folks figure out that not just free over-the-air channels would be able to be distributed, but you could actually create your own channels, like HBO, and distribute those on a pay-to-play basis to consumers willing to pay for that content.
And that happened around the 70s. But it all has to be done through a coaxial cable?
It has to be done through some kind of wire. And for decades, it was delivered over a coax cable. But a lot of providers now are moving to fiber optic networks that are able to deliver a lot more content a lot more quickly throughout their network.
But you also have to have a cable box or a cable converter. Is that the way they control it, or is that the only way it can really work?
The answer to both those questions are kind of. you do need a set-top box on top of your television set in order to navigate the different channel offerings coming to you via your cable provider or your satellite provider or your telco provider now that Verizon and AT&T are delivering video service. The difference is who provides that cable set-top box and how do you pay for it? There's been a lot of efforts on behalf of consumer advocates and others to try to get the federal government to create one common standard for all cable companies, telco companies, and satellite companies, and even television manufacturers, so that consumers don't have to rent their boxes at, you know, $4 to $10 per television set per month from whoever is providing them service. But they could just go out to Best Buy and spend $100 one shot, get the box that they need, and then when they move from New York to Florida, they can bring it with them, and they don't have to keep paying these outrageous monthly fees.
I'd imagine the cable companies hate that idea.
Yeah, and I don't think they're big fans, both from a financial standpoint and also from a technical standpoint.
With digital transmission now the law, are people still able to rely on free over-the-air broadcasting? Isn't it much harder to get a picture now?
Yeah, well, it is. The transition to digital broadcasting happened in June of this past year, and the idea there is that any consumers that had some of the older analog television sets, the ones that look more like boxes rather than rectangles, they would have to buy a converter box in order to get free over-the-air signals. These are the folks that do not subscribe to cable. Because of the nature of digital signals, and it's a little bit different than analog signals, a lot of folks have been reporting reception problems, at least early on. So for that, about 12 to 15% of the population in America that still relies on free over-the-air signals and are not subscribers to cable, they either had to deal with the transition through buying a new television set, buying a new converter box, and kind of reformatting their antenna and the way that their antenna delivers the signal to their television set in order to continue watching free over-the-air broadcast.
But isn't it difficult if you have a high-definition digital television set to just turn it on and get channel 2, channel 4, channel 7?
Right. You'd absolutely have to have an antenna hooked up to your even if you have a new high-end digital HD TV, you still have to have an antenna in order to receive to get a picture on that screen. And because of the signal, it's not necessarily the quality of your equipment, but because of the way that the signal's delivered, sometimes digital signals have a little bit more trouble bouncing around tall buildings in very urban markets or getting to folks who live down in valleys and more geographic or topographical challenging markets.
Who are the main cable companies? Are they the ones who were the pioneers in the business?
For the most part. One of the very first people to figure out how to distribute cable was Charles Dolan, whose family still owns Cablevision in New York City and throughout the Eastern Seaboard to this day. But the major cable providers in the country are companies like Comcast.
That's number one?
That's number one. Time Warner Cable, I believe, is number two. Cablevision is also high up there. Cox Communications, Charter Communications, and there's several others throughout the United States. But the big point is even though there's multiple cable companies out there, they don't really compete with one another direct, head to head. They kind of operate in these regional fiefdoms, and there's some competition coming to the marketplace with the introduction of the teleco companies like Verizon and AT&T. But that's very limited, and those companies haven't necessarily built out their footprint to compete head-to-head with cable companies all throughout the United States.
Although we do see those very aggressive ads from Verizon going directly after Time Warner.
Yeah, depending on where Verizon has built out and who the incumbent cable provider is, they're aggressively marketing their services and to consumers. Because they have a little bit of a different type of technology, and they're trying to differentiate themselves from one another. But the real kind of consumer gripe here that has existed forever is that no matter what competition erupts to challenge cable, whether it was satellite in the 70s and 80s, whether it's now telco in 2000 and forward, nothing has been able to pressure the industry to lower their prices on a month-to-month basis. We've seen nothing but skyrocketing cable rates since we started counting in the 1980s. And since 1996, when deregulation of the cable industry started, cable rates for most consumers throughout America have risen double the rate of inflation. That is, cable has risen twice as fast as almost every other consumer good in the marketplace.
No, and telco, for example, Verizon doesn't really compete on a price level. They say that they have better quality. Is there a major quality difference between the various competing systems?
The answer is not quite yet. Although the consumers that we interview through Consumer Reports have shown that their overall experience is better with fiber, with Verizon and AT&T. Whether it's quality of the TV offerings, whether it's quality of customer service, or just overall value, that remains to be seen. But I think what you'll start to see is these companies start to compete over the triple play service, the idea that you can bundle your cable, your internet, and your telephone bill all together. And when that kind of gets rolled out, I think you'll see Verizon Fios or fiber service take a little bit of a lead, because the capacity on the internet side of that triple play service over a fiber to the home network is going to be a little bit more than what you'll see for cable or some of the other different types of internet service providers.
My guest is Joel Kelsey, Associate Policy Analyst for Consumers Union, and we're talking about cable television here on today's Please Explain. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Perhaps we should define some terms. What's the difference between a provider and a distributor of content?
So in the video marketplace, a provider of content is what you'd think of as your kind of traditional TV channels, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, PBS. There's also Viacom and Time Warner. And those kind of companies own most of all of the other channels that you'll see on your cable offering. You know, USA Network and E is owned by NBC, for example. ABC or Disney owns ESPN and a number of other channels.
Wait, so you could be a provider and a distributor at the same time?
No, those are all just providers of the content. A distributor is a cable company like Time Warner, like Comcast, like Cox or Cablevision. Now, here's where things get a little bit tricky, is that sometimes those particular cable companies will also own their own channels. And so they'll be kind of vertically integrated. Not only are they distributors, but they also own their own channels. And the real tricky part and the piece for consumers to watch out for is when the channels that are owned by those cable companies compete with other channels. How does the cable company treat that competition? Do they give preference to the channels that are owned by themselves, or do they allow other channels to get on their cable platform and reach their subscribers? And that's where a lot of the kind of battles in the marketplace erupt from.
Can you tell us about the Comcast-NBC debate that's underway right now?
So this is in our prediction, bodes very badly for consumers. You have the largest cable company in the nation, Comcast, proposing to acquire NBC Universal, owned by General Electric. If that's the case, I think we'll see a number of troublesome, factors developing, both in the traditional marketplace of cable, but also in the new emerging online video marketplace.
It might help Jay Leno's numbers.
We'll see. I think one of the biggest fears that we have is, you know, if Comcast owns NBC and all of the content associated with NBC, like USA Network and E and others, the first thing that they're going to do is go out to all of the cable companies that they compete with and say, that was the old price that you paid for this content. Now we own it, and here's the new price, and that will be more expensive. And those costs will, of course, get passed directly along to consumers. With regard to the online video marketplace, which is kind of this new, exciting development in the distribution of video, you have a whole bunch of different models that kind of exist out there right now. You have Hulu.com, which is, you know, the ability of consumers to go to Hulu.com and grab a whole bunch of content and view it on their television screen or their computer screen. Netflix, which a lot of folks will be familiar with. They either deliver a DVD to you via mail, or you can now point your computer to their site and stream video online. And now you have this new kind of service that the cable companies have tried to roll out called TV Everywhere, which to us is a little bit troublesome, because it requires that you first have a cable subscription before you're able to access video content online, which is kind of takes all of the problems that consumers traditionally have with the cable marketplace, that is that they don't compete with one another and that they're forced to buy these giant bundles of channels in order to get the two or three channels they actually want. And it forces it or connects it to the world of online video.
Can you explain what's been going on with these two stories that have been in the newspapers? In fact, a lot of ads between Time Warner and Fox until they resolve their problems, and Cablevision still hasn't resolved its issues with the TV Food Network Group.
So these issues are similar to the idea of content companies or content providers charging cable operators for access to their content. So in the issue of Fox and Time Warner, Fox is going through a new negotiation to allow Time Warner to distribute its channels. It's called a retransmission consent negotiation. So basically Fox is saying, we consent to allow you to retransmit the signal of Fox and all of the channels associated with Fox to your subscribers.
But wait,
and they want to up the price.
But in the past, weren't the cable companies just simply taking those signals and distributing them to their subscribers for free?
Yes, for the free over-the-air channels. But
yeah,
it's important to remember that Fox isn't just Fox. Fox is also Fox News and a whole suite of other cable television channels that are not delivered free over-the-air. And so by tying their flagship station of Fox to all of those other channels, they then go into negotiation with Time Warner and say, it's not just one channel we're talking about, it's 15. And if you want your subscribers to have access to all of these channels, we want you to pay us more per subscriber. Now, the cable company isn't you know, free of dirt on their hands in this whole process either, from our perspective, because they then turn around and force their consumers to buy all of the 150 channels in order to get the few that they want. So, you know, folks are usually forced to pay more and more every single year per month for their cable subscription, even though they're only watching a few of the many channels that are out there.
There's another factor here. In the old days, advertisers just went to the over-the-air providers and bought ads there, but now cable companies run ads as well, don't they?
That's correct.
So they're competing in a way that I guess nobody envisioned when they first started going into business.
For advertising mm-hmm. revenue. Yeah, that's correct. And I think what nuances that, or what makes that even more complex, is that advertising revenues in general, not only across cable and broadcast television, but also with newspapers, are going down because of the eruption of online internet-based content. And so as broadcasters or traditional kind of content providers like Fox, ABC, NBC start losing advertising revenue, they're going to seek to make up that revenue in other places, and one of those places is going to be the negotiation with cable companies. So I think you'll start to see these fights between Time Warner and Fox, or between Cablevision and Scripps Network, which owns the Food Network and Do-It-Yourself TV and Home Garden. I think you'll see these kinds of fights get uglier and more public as advertising revenue continues to decline and the folks that produce the content want to try to make that revenue up somewhere else.
My guest is Joel Kelsey, Associate Policy Analyst for Consumers Union, which is the publisher of Consumer Reports. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We already are getting a fair number of comments, most of them about the complications of the bills and why we have to take all of those channels that we are not interested in, can't just pick the channels that we might be interested in, pay for them instead. We'll come back with Joel's answers and your calls after this. We are back with Joel Kelsey, who's Associate Policy Analyst for Consumers Union, the publisher of Consumer Reports, and we're talking about cable television, and we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. Let's talk about the basic cable bill. Basic service is $13. But does anybody just pay $13?
Basic service depends on where you live and who your cable provider is. The short answer is no. Most folks don't pay just the $13, and I think less and less will be able to pay that basic rate as the set-top boxes that consumers are beginning to have to get in order to put a picture on their screen will continue to make that basic rate more expensive, because you'll have add-ons for those boxes for every single television set that you have in your home.
Well, right now, don't you have to pay for those boxes or for all the equipment that they give you?
Yeah, and it's unfortunately, it's not just pay for. You have to actually rent the box from the cable company.
And so the remotes as well, right?
Yeah, for a lot of cases, in a lot of instances, cable companies will have you rent the remote as well.
They have standard service, which is $37. I think I'm doing Time Warner's. How is that different from basic service, which that person also pays?
So that could be one of two things. One is that either that additional $37 might be for the expanded basic channels. Mm-hmm. So instead of just a basic television service, you're getting kind of more of the, you know, Comedy Central, maybe the Golf Channel, ESPN, things like that, based on who your cable subscriber is. Or it could be if it's a triple play bill, then that standard service might be for long distance telephone.
Yeah, and in that case, Time Warner originally offered the whole thing for $100, although it doesn't cost $100; it costs more.
Yeah, well, once you start tacking on those extra surcharges and fees, it quickly climbs above $100. I think most consumers realize that the basic rate actually means an extra $15 a month on top of whatever folks are offering. And the other thing for consumers to, I think, keep in mind is when they're doing the triple play, a lot of times that first introductory offer is only there for the honeymoon period. And then after the first 6 months, 1 year, or in some cases 18 months of service, that $100 turns into a lot more very quickly. And that kind of sticker shock is what I think a lot of consumers in the marketplace who are early adopters of triple play are facing right now.
A couple of listeners have left comments on our show page about how complicated the Verizon Fios bills are. And Bill in Staten Island says that the Fios bill, on the bill, the fees, surcharges, and taxes add almost 25% more, and wonders if that's legal.
Unfortunately, yes. And you know, the real kind of heart of the issue here is truth in billing. It's you know, how are those charges explained to consumers both at the point of sale and then afterwards? And, you know, we for a long time fought for more transparency in the marketplace and fought for cable, telco, and satellite providers to be more upfront and more transparent with consumers about how much their bill is going to be at point of sale. And that they shouldn't be tacking on different types of surcharges and fees that really should be just a part of monthly service. You know, they try to peel off different things, different types of, you know, things that they may claim are regulatory fees or other types of surcharges in order to try to bring down that basic rate as they advertise to consumers to try to make their service more appealing. But really it should, you know, a lot of those surcharges and fees should be combined together and given to the consumer when they're making decisions on whether or not they want service at the point of sale.
JT on Long Island asks, why do cable providers have so many fringe channels? I know this sounds great to say that they are giving you 300 channels, but if 200 of them don't appeal to 90% of the viewers, they should get rid of them and lower their rates. Why did they resist cafeteria-style programming where you get to choose the channels you actually want to watch?
We couldn't agree with him more. We think that a la carte channel offerings is definitely the way to go with cable. Unfortunately, the kind of this cartel that I was describing before, where the owners of content, the big six, tie all of their channels together and force them on cable companies, and then cable companies turn around and force the whole suite of channels, not only from those big six, but also the channels that they themselves own. If you're Cablevision, you own MSG. If you're Comcast, for example, you own Versus, and they force all of those channels onto their subscribers. We couldn't agree more. We think that subscribers should have the ability to choose which channels they want to watch and pay for those channels. Now, this is the system in Canada, and there's no reason in our mind why that couldn't exist here.
Now, the other providers like Fox, you say, charge per subscriber. What happens if a subscriber never watches any of the Fox channels?
They're still paying.
Democrats have to pay the same as Republicans when it comes to Fox?
Yeah. You still pay. You subsidize all of the channels that you don't want to watch. And that, for a lot of folks, is troubling because they, you know, it's just a pocketbook issue. But for some folks, it's a content issue. I mean, some folks really take issue with some of the content that they see on some of the cable networks. And they don't want to be subsidizing content that they feel is offensive or somehow against their values. So regardless of where you fall on the political spectrum, conservative or liberal, some folks have a lot of problems with that.
Ben in Brooklyn asks, do cable operators know what all the customers, what all customers are watching at all times? Is that information used like Nielsen ratings?
Sometimes, and that it depends on who the cable operator is, and it depends on the sophistication of their infrastructure. For folks that have fiber networks, which is most of the cable companies, they usually can tell what folks are watching. I don't know that that's a privacy concern quite yet, as much as it would be kind of online. But they do keep track, particularly on on-demand choices and offerings. So if you're a subscriber that subscribes to on-demand, where you can kind of point your set-top box to the programs that you want to watch and watch it on an episode-by-episode basis, those kind of preferences are kept on record by cable companies.
Rick in Morningside Heights asks, I just saw that Apple is proposing to enable custom channels for people made up of your favorite shows or channels, mm-hmm. as everyone would prefer. Would that have a real impact on the cable companies?
We hope so. I mean, and so this is one of the really great things about the disruptive market effects of online video is that, you know, without having to legislate or regulate the a la carte world of the traditional cable marketplace, we're starting to see the power of consumer demand take hold online, where a lot of folks are now going to the internet to get some of the content that they want. And they're able to get it on not just a channel-by-channel basis, but an episode-by-episode basis. And so we're very interested in seeing the new models that are up there. I mean, I think, you know, someone's got to pay for content, so, you know, consumers will always have to pay in some way or another. But for a lot of folks that are willing to get rid of their cable bill and cut the cord and move online and are willing to pay online, we're very interested in making sure that we preserve the different business models and those business models' access to content in order to compete with traditional cable. So, Apple TV seems like a good business model going forward, Hulu, Netflix, a lot of these other ventures. The TV Everywhere model of online content troubles us because it forces consumers first to subscribe to cable before they're able to get video online. And that just exacerbates this whole problem of bundling and not allowing consumers to get cost savings based on the content they don't want to watch. So we're watchful of TV Everywhere and how it's being rolled out and what it might mean for the online video marketplace.
Andrew from Bedford, New York. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I have a question about regulatory problems with Cablevision. We have two different areas where we have upload speeds that vary widely during the day, and they drop dramatically about 80% at night when kids are home from school and parents are on using their games and everything else. And Cablevision keeps on saying it's not their issue, it's an equipment issue, it's in the connections, this, that, and the other thing. We've done some testing to find out that that's not the case, and yet we have no recourse against Cablevision because their advertising says up to 15 megabytes upload speed. We're lucky if we get 3 most of the time, and I was wondering if there's anything else we can do.
You can write to the FCC and tell them about your problem. One of the good news that I have to report to you is that they're taking this issue very, very seriously, this issue of truth in broadband advertising. You'll notice that a lot of companies always advertise an up to speed rather than an actual speed. And the FCC has recently reported that over 50% of the time, that's misleading, that it's actually kind of deceptive, and that consumers aren't getting delivered the prices that they're being advertised. We hope that that they will soon move to a place where they'll require not only cable companies but also telco companies and any other internet service provider to consistently describe in very clear terms to consumers what the actual delivered speeds will be. And what they can expect not only during downtime but also during peak hours, like you describe, and kind of what the quality of their networks are, so that consumers can more easily compare and contrast one internet service provider to another internet service provider that may be very, very close in price.
Thank you so much for your call. We go now to Steve from Long Island. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. My two questions are about availability of content on Fios. I live in Long Island. We get Fios, but we can't get MSNBC on Fios, and we get, you know, all the other NBC channels. I was wondering if there's a, you know, and I've tried to find out the reason for that. I can't really get that. That was the first question. The other question is, on Fios, you cannot get MSG channels in high def, and I know that's because the Dolans own MSG and own Cablevision. And they're probably doing that as a competition thing, but is that legal, and is there any recourse?
Those are both very excellent questions. The first question, the answer to the first question is I'm not quite sure why you don't get MSNBC if you're getting the other NBC suite of programming via Verizon Fios. My guess is it's something to do with the negotiation between General Electric that owns NBC and Verizon. And somehow in the negotiation for content carriage, MSNBC was left off the table. I could be wrong. You should contact definitely Verizon to try to find out. On the MSG not being offered to Verizon, unfortunately, yes, that is legal. It's what's right now called the terrestrial loophole. And what that essentially means is when cable companies started buying channels, like, for example, Cablevision owning MSG, the federal government said, well, hey, you know, you have to deliver, if you're delivering those channels to yourself and your own subscribers, you have to also allow your competitors to get access to that content if it's going to cause competitive problems in the marketplace. But what they didn't make, what they didn't require is for Cablevision, for example, to make available the content that they deliver not via satellite but via their wires in the ground, their terrestrial wires, to their other competitors, and that's why it's called the terrestrial loophole. So you don't get HD, you know, Rangers games. You don't get HG Sabres games if you live in Buffalo and you subscribe to Verizon Fios. That's a big problem, and we've been advocating at the FCC for many, many years for them to close that loophole and force cable companies that also own content, particularly regional sports networks, to make that content available to their competitors at a fair and equitable rate.
And thank you for your call, Steve. I didn't mean to pick on Cablevision because I used to have a television show on one of their channels. But another listener writes in, Cablevision is also playing a game with customers to force them to purchase DVD-R boxes so they can make more money. In the summer, they upgraded their software so you can say you can no longer set a VCR record from the program guide. They removed it so you can only set a VCR reminder. I've called 5 times, and they've totally blown me off. It's a simple fix, but they refuse to do it, so customers will be forced to buy a DVD-R box for $10 a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with the VCR and the recording, but most cable companies are moving to require their subscribers to get set-top boxes for all of their television sets. This is a move that's been happening for a long time. We originally called it the forced digital migration because consumers really didn't have very much recourse. Now there's been a little bit of market change where the cable companies that are doing this will give the boxes to their customers for free up to a year or two, will waive the fee of installation and things like that. We view that as a good thing, although the forced migration is certainly troublesome for consumers that want to continue to watch an analog. The real thing that's going on behind the scenes there is that cable companies are trying to migrate their channels to digital platforms so they can free up more space over their wires, over their pipes. When you move channels to digital, it's just a more efficient technology, and it opens up more internet capacity and more capacity to carry multiple channels over their cable distribution platform.
We have very little time. I want to get to one more question. Nico in Crown Heights said, I heard that with the switch over to digital is actually easier now to get channels for free. I'm not sure how this would work technically speaking. Your guest, however, suggested otherwise. Can he explain?
The transition to digital allows you to get more clear. The pictures will be clearer and the sound will be better, and you'll have more channels available to you than ever before. This is with broadcast digital television, free over the air, not cable. And that's all good things. The problem is that the signals propagate differently, and the signals of digital television is a little bit different than the signal of the old analog television. So just because you once got analog television channels very clearly doesn't necessarily mean that you'll get digital television channels as clear. During rainstorms, in particular, sometimes the digital signal will go out. And that's all about the power of the broadcaster and the tower of that broadcaster and how they own it in your particular area and the topography of where you live.
And we have to leave it there, unfortunately, because there are a lot of questions coming in from listeners. But my great thanks to you, Joel Kelsey, Associate Policy Analyst for Consumers Union, which is the publisher of Consumer Reports, for talking with us today on this Please Explain look at cable television and why we pay so much on our cable bills.
Thank you for having me, Leonard.